This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Ashton Mara. It's 7:35. Unless you're one of the more than 65,000 state employees in West Virginia, the term OASIS may be a new one for you. OASIS stands for Our Advanced Solution with Integrated Systems and is slowly changing the way the state does business, with some emphasis on slowly. Members of the Joint Committee on Government Organization were given an update on its progress yesterday during an interim meeting and found out that while they're working through the current problems, new ones may be on the horizon.
There were round pegs into round holes and square pegs into square holes, but unfortunately there was some of the opposite, round into square, square into round, that we've had to do some work on.
Rick Pickens is the director of the OASIS project. In the most basic sense, OASIS is a computer software system that will eventually handle all functions of state government. Right now, it's used to create the budget, coordinate projects for the Department of Transportation, and as of this summer, handle all of the back office business functions, things like accounts payable and receivable, investments and grants. But the rollout was far from perfect. As a state agency here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, we experienced issues with the vendor and purchasing systems and even had some contract employees go several weeks without pay because of complications. Pickens says OASIS was quickly aware of those issues, and since, things have gotten better. The number of calls to the agency's help desk has dropped from around 400 per day immediately following the rollout to around 100 per day as recently as this week. Those calls are coming from the more than 4,000 employees using the system. Along with the change in the number of calls, Pickens says the type of questions has also changed, but those growing pains were always expected.
They're making a change from a customized system that did business the way exactly the way you wanted to do business to a commercial off-the-shelf software that's been customized, well, been configured, first of all, and then customized to fit us.
Now, OASIS is looking forward to the rollout of the fourth phase of the program. Phase D was scheduled to take effect January 1st. It affects HR and payroll, vacation time, and billing. But because of some issues, the implementation has been pushed back and isn't expected until April.
We're in doing testing of the data we have, trying to do comparisons between data that would have been produced in a payroll from Epics and data would have been produced out of OASIS. And we were having difficulty doing a full reconciliation.
What that means is that when the payroll systems were run side by side, the old system and the new OASIS system, they weren't coming out with the same results. That means state employees wouldn't be getting paid correctly if they went ahead with the system as is. During the meeting Wednesday, Delegate Gary Howell had some questions over the security of this new system, which will soon hold not just all of the state's budget information, but sensitive information for each employee. Think social security numbers, addresses, and pay histories.
How much testing have you done to find holes, security holes in the software?
That's an interesting question. I don't know that I can respond to that. I know there are firms that you can hire, you know, to try and do, I think the term is penetration testing. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we've done that as yet. But again, you know, our full database is encrypted.
So you, if I'm correct here, you haven't actually done any testing looking for holes, or not to your knowledge?
Pickens' answer, in short, was his security chief wasn't with him, so he wasn't positive. But no, they haven't done any of that type of testing. Howell requested the OASIS security manager report back to the committee with more details during a future meeting. Expeditionary education refers specifically to learning associated with exploration and hands-on experiences. As Clark Davis reports, an expeditionary learning school planned for Cabell County has already undergone some changes even before the doors open.
Construction of an expeditionary learning facility at the old Beverly Hills Middle School in Huntington continues.
The reasons that we chose this particular facility is, one, it's a real good facility, still has really good bones.
That's Mike O'Dell. He's the assistant superintendent of operations for Cabell County.
And they project that they'll be finished with the select demo by probably the second week of December.
O'Dell was giving a tour of the former middle school that's now being gutted and renovated. The original plan was to have the middle school ready to become an expeditionary school that would combine the two local elementary schools, Geneva, Kent, and Peyton, by August of 2015. But once the project was put out for bid, the original cost estimate of just under $7 million proved to be too low. It's now believed it will take just over $13 million to turn the former middle school into a facility that could become an elementary school that meets today's standards. The board later increased the budget to over $14 million for the project. The new timetable pushes the opening of the facility from fall 2015 to at least the start of the 2016 calendar year. So the board was left with the decision to delay the opening of the school by a year or put the two groups of elementary students together somewhere else.
And they will be starting at the Geneva Kent side. And what you have before you is how that site will be arranged.
Tim Hardesty is the elementary administrative assistant for Cabell County. He says the former Geneva Kent Elementary will serve as the new school for approximately 460 students the first part of the 2015-2016 school year.
We looked at both existing structures, which one would be the best fit for that number of kids. And because of the space at Geneva Kent to house modulars, we went with that.
An expeditionary learning school uses unconventional teaching methods that include less lecturing and more participation. The method also includes projects that involve the community. William Smith is the superintendent of Cabell County Schools. He says after all the training and expeditionary methods the teachers have gone through, he would rather start at Geneva Kent than put off the school's opening.
One of the key strengths of this approach, of any approach, but this approach particularly, is the staff has time built into the schedule so they can collaborate and hone their practice. I think that's what's missing in education as it is.
Smith says he doesn't want to lose the momentum that's been created around the idea of an expeditionary learning school in the area.
I think it's really the strategy is to make sure we get started as quickly as we can. The staff is excited, and while the momentum's high, that's when you need to move on it. So another year, I think, would be just kind of very, very difficult to hold people back and say, well, we can't do it yet.
Ryan McKenzie will be the principal at the new school. He says, of course, he would like to go straight into the renovated Beverly Hills facility, but they'll be ready at Geneva Kent, even if it's only for a few months.
Well, sure. I mean, it would be great to walk into a brand new building in August of 2015, but, you know, it'll still be a great building, and now they have the time to do what they really need to do to make it wonderful for our kids.
The Cabell County Board of Education is still deciding on the new school's name, school colors, and a mascot. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:43. Mostly to partly cloudy today with a chance of drizzle, highs in the 50s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the upper 40s. I'm sorry, upper 30s and 40s.
There's a vehicle accident on southbound U.S. 119 at West Virginia 85 near Danville. Two of two southbound lanes are closed there, so please use caution in the area. Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by WVU Children's Hospital, serving the healthcare needs of all West Virginia's children. Located in Ruby Memorial Hospital, online at WVUKids.com.
Hi, I'm Beth Voorhees. Few other organizations make it their mission to bring you stories and voices that shed light, show respect, or give new meaning to shared and diverse viewpoints and experiences. You can support this rewarding effort and all the excellent programs on West Virginia Public Radio with your financial gift of support. Call 1-800-723-4687 or go online at wvpublic.org. And thanks.
There's a new film festival being held this weekend in Lewisburg. It will feature two films making their West Virginia premieres, Skeleton Twins, starring former Saturday Night Live stars Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig, and To Be Takai, featuring George Takei, who played Mr. Sulu in the original TV Star Trek series, but is now known for his gay and civil rights activism. But the title of the film festival contains a certain word. For an explanation in the use of that word, Beth Voorhees went right to the film festival's director.
My name is Tim Ward, and I am the founder and director of the Appalachian Queer Film Festival.
I'm not comfortable with that word. I've had to say it on the radio now a couple of times, and I'm just not comfortable with that word.
That's understandable. You know, going to college, it was a word that I became very comfortable with. In the academic world, it seems to be, you know, when you study something that's LGBTQ related, you study it as the queer theory of. So I was extremely comfortable using the word. So when we brought together the group of people that planned the festival, when we were thinking of names for the festival, it was just an automatic to say, well, this is LGBT related. This is LGBTQ content. Of course it's queer. And then secondly, the reason why we wanted to use queer is because it's an umbrella term. And it's a term that encompasses everyone who has been affected or is being affected or identifies with the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited to have that word as a part of our film festival. You know, in West Virginia, it's really interesting when we've been in touch with folks around the state and said, you know, this is who we are. They kind of take a minute and they ask us, like, am I allowed to say that word?
Yeah.
And because there is a negative connotation to it. And what we're trying to do is give people permission to use that word in public consumption. You know, and it's also been really good for us to, outside of the state, folks are like, Appalachian and queer in the same sentence? Like, how is that happening? This is awesome. So it's been a really great word that's kind of created a conversation about the festival even before the festival starts.
So it creates buzz.
It creates buzz for sure, but it does exactly what we want the festival to do. We want the festival to open up a dialogue between groups of people that, in a way that it hasn't been done before.
I've just been thinking there was a television show years ago called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Yeah.
And I had problems with that too. Are we not supposed to fear that word anymore? Sounds like you don't fear that word.
You know, I'm a gay man. I'm part of the LGBTQ community, and I don't fear that word. I think that it's a beautiful word. It's a word that we've reclaimed to some extent to mean a community, to mean, you know, everyone has a seat at the table. Everyone's invited to participate. So I think it's a really beautiful word, and I'm proud that an organization that I founded has that word in the title.
West Virginia has come a long way since last week, hasn't it? Where were you when you heard the news that same-sex marriage would be legal in the state?
I was actually in my car waiting on it, a tow truck to come, is I had a flat tire, and I was tweeting up a storm. So that was it was a really, really exciting moment.
So did you learn from it from Twitter?
I did. I learned, I don't know why I was on Twitter. I think I was just bored in my car at that point, and then I saw it came through, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And so I just started participating in the conversation, and as a gay man here in the state, as a guy who started a queer film festival in West Virginia, it means a lot to know that my state accepts me for who I am and is also willing to allow me to marry the person that I love.
Tell us about your film festival. What do you have planned?
This is our inaugural year. This is 2014 is our inaugural year. We're really excited about it. We have 12 films, many of which premiered at Sundance, most of which will have their West Virginia premiere at our festival. So that's super exciting for us. We also have, in addition to the films, we have a lot of the filmmakers, or whether that's the director or the producer, that is going to be on hand to do a Q&A directly following the screening of their film. So not only will audience members get to watch a film that hasn't come to West Virginia and probably won't come to West Virginia in theaters, they'll also get to ask direct questions with the filmmakers, which is something that we really pride ourselves on. We're also going to have a couple panels, one of which is called Queer Film and Activism, where we explore the role film plays in creating, in advocacy, LGBT advocacy. So that's going to be really exciting. We also have another panel called My Journey to Acceptance, Raising My LGBTQ Child in Appalachia.
It's really okay for me to say that word on the radio.
It's very okay for you to say that word on the radio. I give you permission to say that word on the radio. I give you permission to say that word off of the radio, too.